Today on Piano Jazz, my guests are two of my favorite people, drummer Joe Morello and bassist Bill Crowe. In the 1950s, Joe and Bill were my sidemen at the Hickory House, a steakhouse and jazz club on 52nd Street in Manhattan. I thought it would be a kick to get the guys back together again and have them for Piano Jazz, which we did in 1990.
You know, I haven't seen you for an age. And of course, after we worked at the Hickory House, which maybe not everybody knows, this was in the 50s. God.
We were the last jazz on 52nd Street after Ryan's moved.
I think so.
Yeah.
But of course, you and Joe both went on to such great things in various groups and with various people. Didn't you go right off to the Hickory House and join Jerry Mulligan? Wasn't that what you did?
Yes, that was when he had an opening in his sextet. And the lure of his arranging and Bob Brookmeyer on trombone was irresistible. Oh, we had Zoot then, too. Zoot Sims and John Eardley, and the drummer was Dave Bailey.
I heard the group many times, and it was wonderful. Joe, of course, we know where you went. You went with Dave Brubeck.
No, after I left your group, that Tommy Dorsey thing was coming up, and then a Benny Goodman thing, and Benny hated me, incidentally, because I didn't want to rehearse with his band. But then I did go with Dave, yeah.
Well, now, how long did that last? I forget. It seemed like it went on forever.
12 and a half years.
My goodness, you can't keep a steady job.
That's always been my problem.
You know, we could go on forever talking about the Hickory House and the different things we did, but I think we probably should play something, shouldn't we?
Well, we've got the instruments here. We might as well.
We might as well. Joe, what about the tune you wanted to do? I'm beginning to see the light.
Sure.
Is that good?
Sure. Would you like me to...
You count it off, or you start it.
Okay.
Okay?
You all set?
Yep.
Here we go.
Joe, did you bring the ratchet?
No, I couldn't find one. It's somewhere buried in the...
When I think of what you used to do, when I would get up onto the bandstand, up those three steps...
Mm-hmm. Oh, that was kind of crazy.
And you would turn the ratchet.
Oh, when Julius would walk...
So I would get up on the bandstand, he would turn the ratchet.
Make it sound like her knees were very old.
Yeah, like my knees were gone.
It'd be like... You know.
Well, it's funny, when we first came to work there, when I first joined the group, the only light on the bandstand was a little soft floodlight that they had over the piano shining down on Marion's head. And we were in the middle of a huge oval bar with piles of whiskey bottles on both ends and the bartenders running around at our feet. And Marion would complain that there was more light out in the room than there was on the bandstand. It was very hard for us to attract the attention of the audience sometimes. So we finally got John Popkin, the owner, to turn the brightest lights off as soon as the dinner hour was over and the music began. But it was still very bright in there. So one night when he was away, Marion gave me enough money to go buy some lights, and I built a little switch system.
Oh, that was wonderful. And, that was a wonderful improvement.
Yeah, and I had it worked out so that I could catch the switches with my foot.
That's
and
right.
So when we did fours, the light would, in time, switch from Joe to me or Marion to Joe or whatever. But one night I crept around and turned out all the lights in the room except the wall sconces and the fireplace in back was had a big fire where the hickory steaks were cooked, and it had the effect of lowering this huge ceiling. It must have been a 40-foot ceiling in that club, and made it look very intimate, and the focal point was the bandstand. It was very nice. It looked like a nightclub for a change.
It's funny, I remember that, and how disappointed I was when Mr. Popkin came back and turned all the lights on.
Yes,
again.
He came running in and said, "Who put out the lights? People will think we're closed."
In fact, he had this huge cabinet with steaks and pieces of meat in it, and
it was lit better than we were.
It was. In fact, I said to him rather vulgarly, "Why don't you turn that light out and put some lights on the other meat?" And he wasn't too amused. Well, let's have a go at another tune.
Great.
Before you do that, you know, I want to get something clear. I mean, you've been telling me about this, me being late all the time, and that only happened once. Why does everyone laugh when I say that? Let me just make myself perfectly clear. What happened, if I'm elected? No, but what happened is this. I was living in Jersey at the time, which I still am living in Jersey, and I used to take the train over, and this one night, the train actually got stuck in the tunnel. This is true. These things do happen. They're machines.
Oh,
stop
sure.
laughing, Crow. So what happened is we used to do a remote from there, a little radio broadcast, and I remember getting just in time, and I jumped in a cab, and I said, "Get me, blah, blah." We went there, and you just started your theme song, and I ran up on the stage. But that's what really happened. And Marion never forgave me for that.
What you said, though, that the train blew up.
Well,
that was your excuse. The train blew up, and then you described how hot coals flew out of the engine.
It was just a small bomb. It was nothing, really.
But, you know, in those days, I was so concerned if the rhythm section wasn't there to start. I really wasn't together with playing solo piano except on a slow tune. I mean, I still may not be, but at least I can go out and do it if the bass player and drummer don't show up. You know, I'll just go ahead and play anyway.
Should we leave now?
I think you can stay.
It's our cue, Bill. You heard it now.
Well, Bill, something you showed me. I used to play this tune called "I Hear Music," and you had this nice little, I don't know what you call it, putting the tune in another place, that the tune goes. You had it go.
Did I do that?
You did that. No, you did that. It was nice because then the melody is on the bottom.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. I thought it was sort of hip.
Shall we do it?
Yeah, let's do it. Okay, here we go. Like one, two, one. You were, I think you were there, Bill, at the Hickory House when we created an imaginary drummer.
Marvin Bonessa.
All these drummers would come in and Joe would be telling them about Marvin Bonessa. Were you there then?
I remember, I think you had done that before I joined, but I helped perpetuate the myth.
Well, you know, we actually perpetuated that thing to such an extent that we had Marvin Bonessa's name in the downbeat.
And in Playboy
drum
also?
Pole.
Yeah, he got a couple of votes. And,
yeah.
Several. I think I sent in about 10.
You want to know what's funny about this? When I was at the quartet with Brubeck, Charlie Bourgeois was, you know, we went on these George Wein team tours all the time in Europe and everything. So we started talking about, and I told Brubeck about this Bonessa thing. And so I was sitting on a plane with Charlie, and I said, "Well, this Marvin Bonessa." I said, "He's the great, you know." I went through my whole thing, and he said, "Well, where is he? Where can we find him?" I said, "Somewhere in the Midwest." I said, "He's kind of a strange guy." And he actually believed it, and he went researching Marvin Bonessa, and he told me, you know, he'd come back and he'd say, well, I haven't found him, but he really thought it was, you know, I don't think till this day he knows it was a pun on.
That's funny, because if you could fool Charlie Bourgeois for something like that,
this is true.
I'll have to ask him when I see him.
I don't know if he recalls, but he actually wanted him. I said, well, the guy is really weird. He doesn't believe in recorded music. I said, he walks in and can wipe anybody out. And I went, you know, the whole routine we had.
Well, back to us. Let's do one of our recorded hits, our Capitol recorded hits. How about Love You Madly, Duke Ellington's tune?
Sure.
Okay.
Fine.
To hear the full Piano Jazz broadcast, tune in next week to your NPR station. Log on to pianojazz.org to find a station in your area. Piano Jazz is a production of South Carolina ETV and Radio. Support for Piano Jazz comes from Save America's Treasures, a partnership between the National Endowment for the Arts and the National Park Service, Department of the Interior. Fazioli Pianos, the Friends of Piano Jazz, and NPR.